Hi, this is Paul. On the video I released today, Modernity Collapse, Atheists Ponder the Value of Civilizational Christianity, I mentioned a little bit Jonathan Peugeot's tweet, Rockaby Lock on the treetop, when the wind blows, the enlightenment will rock, when the bough breaks, the enlightenment will fall, and down will come freedom, the enlightenment and all. Again, I have to find out where that little poem came from. But I didn't really get too much into sort of this ongoing, it's kind of drive-by shooting. That's sort of James Lindsay's style on Twitter that he's been doing on against the ortho bros and some of the ortho bros and ortho bras firing back on Twitter. It's been sort of interesting to watch. Part of it, and it was connected to the ARC. This is one of the early tweets that sort of set it off. Jonathan Peugeot tweets, how about this then? The true bullshit is born in those naive men who for a few short centuries believed in a secular Promethean defiance, which turned out to be religious after all, just a satanic one. And your own project of denouncing the Gnostic aspect of communism, so on and so forth. And James responds, this is ridiculous. And then he follows up with, so now given his stature in the ARC forum and how weird the forum was in various ways, I left wondering if ARC is an explicitly counter-enlightenment or anti-enlightenment project. Some of their written materials suggest WEF 2050 plus religion instead of WEF 2030 minus God. Now, I don't think ARC is anti-enlightenment. I don't think ARC is defined that thoroughly. This little meme suggests part of ARC. ARC is still very much sort of in process. It's a coalition and various aspects of it. It's sort of reactive. I did a conversation with Glenn Scrivener, which is now in the No Wait, No Ads. It'll come out a little bit later this week. If you really, really want to watch it before it comes out, you can find it there. And the deeply religious aspect, but in terms of the coalition and all the members, it's not specifically around, let's say, the movement of one. This is not like a Roman Catholic attempt to do X. Protestants are by nature, especially sort of the kind of Protestantism that ran the world before the Second World War, at least ran the United States and parts of the UK. And you see, you get a church. This stuff is so incredibly complex and messy. See, now I'm doing the Joker thing again. So, yeah, ARC is still very amorphous, and we don't quite really know where it lands. And you can hear Glenn and I sort of working on that. Now, Neil Murray, if you don't want to watch the rest of the video, in a lot of ways, Neil Murray sort of, I think, kind of nice, succinctly gets at part of what's going on here. I see James as hyperprotective of the U.S. Constitution and sees great danger in any toppling of the primacy of the secular. Jonathan sees danger in the primacy of the secular. It's fun that they had a chat before with no major disagreements, yet now James won't talk. Will he talk? Won't he talk? You know, we'll see what comes. And Benjamin wants to have him in there, but again, this is all part of the reassessment of the secular and where things are going. Because again, some people, it's hard to put this stuff. Secularity is coming apart, and I said, you know, modernity is collapsing. Yeah, secularity is coming apart. You might say, well, where is it coming apart? You can see it coming apart in the Hagia Sophia being turned from a museum into a mosque. You can see it coming apart as India becomes more self-consciously Hindu, and there's more tensions between Hindus and Buddhists and Muslims in India. When freedom of religion sort of recedes, because freedom of religion is built on this construction of this particular definition of religion that in many ways a lot of religious people like myself have been chafing against. And now that it's receding, you can see on one hand, it's like, yeah, well, you know, everybody's got a religion. And that's the loss of the idea that religion can sort of be segmented is kind of a problem, because again, the religion that was sort of assumed by everyone was sort of a Protestant Christianity that was always under the surface. And Roman Catholics that came to America learned to abide by that, and some basically adopted it, while others have sort of chafed against it. But now, as we're getting, as I said in the earlier videos about ARC, secularity and modernity is assaulted from the right and assaulted from the left. James Lindsay is very much wants to keep secularity here and to continue to bolster it. And so his side of the divorce of the church of atheism has been keep secularity alive. And so I think Neil Murray really nails it. And I want to say a few things about the agent-arena relationship here with respect to this conversation. It's Twitter. So actually, I posted this on Twitter today. So someone sends me this thing with Alex Trebek saying, you know, something you can describe in detail that almost everyone agrees with until they say its name. And someone puts down Calvinism. And I thought this is a hilarious joke based on, you know, Luke and a bunch of people are always saying, well, what you call Calvinism, we call Christianity. And I say, exactly. And so Father Barnabas Powell says, oh, come on. And it's a joke. It's Twitter. Twitter should be used for fun. Now, you can share articles. You can do a lot of different things with Twitter. But one of the things you're not going to have is a careful, nuanced conversation. The structure of the platform simply does not encourage it or facilitate it very well. It just doesn't happen. The forum is rather schizophrenic. And so when I saw this dust up between James and Jonathan Pajone his following, I thought, yeah, I'm not surprised at all we're having this dust up because of what's happening in the culture with respect to the secular. And so when you look at, again, Jonathan's tweet about, you know, I wouldn't phrase it like Jonathan did, but the way Jonathan phrased it is effective for Twitter because it causes reaction. And so you get this chain reaction that happens on Twitter, and you so get these little Twitter explosions. Believed a secular Promethean. That's exactly what this is like. Now, to the degree to which, now calling it satanic, I wouldn't do that. I also see the blessings in the secular. The secular allowed, you know, if you've been watching some of my, allowed a whole lot of Jesus smuggling. And I'm going to continue to talk about that because I think Jesus is getting, I think the Christian Jesus is continuing to infiltrate Islam. And we see this in the work of some Christian missionaries in Islamic countries. There's a lot of contention in this, and there's going to have to be a lot of nuance in it. And I know some people are going to come at me on Twitter and want me to, well, come on, fight me on Twitter. It's like, I'm not going to fight you on Twitter. You can say what you want about me on Twitter. I'm not going to block you, and I'm not going to fight you. Well, maybe someday I haven't had to use the blocking at all because I just think, in most cases, if someone says something that sort of annoys me or sort of gets a reaction, the worst thing I can do on Twitter is react because it just adds to the chain of reaction. So just let it go by. They're just tweets. That's all they are. And I disagree with naming it after a letter of the alphabet. I think that's a silly thing. So yeah, James Lindsay is right in terms of noticing the tensions in ARC. Jonathan Pajot pointed out a couple of elephants in the room, but there were a lot of elephants in that room. And so someone like James Lindsay at ARC is going to feel the tension in this attempt to build a coalition to stand against sort of the woke hegemony. I think it's also important to recognize that people have personas or subpersonalities on Twitter. We went through this with Jordan Peterson not too long ago, and he sort of altered his persona and his personality on Twitter. And whenever he was asked about that, he would and he would walk back tweets on videos. You would see that. He wouldn't walk back tweets on Twitter. He would walk back tweets on videos. And again, people would sort of condemn that, and it's like, this is a game, and it's how he plays the game. So my wife, years ago already, my wife vowed to never play Risk with me again because my wife said that I was being mean. My wife doesn't like to play games with me because in that those specific arenas, I like to win. And I have fun winning, and I can be trollish, and my wife doesn't particularly enjoy when I play games in a certain way. And so she's like, well, not playing Risk with you, not playing these games with you. And so that's fair enough. Now, with some of my sons, we really enjoy playing games like that, and it's cutthroat, and it's trolly, and but it's a game, and we enjoy it. And so, you know, why can't we have nice things like Twitter and Risk and games like this? And we can. So now these subpersonalities are revelatory. They do tell us about individuals and sort of in vino veritas, well, in Twitter veritas to a degree, sometimes maybe people reveal something about them through these little subpersonalities. And again, James Lindsay on Twitter is James Lindsay on Twitter. It's how he rolls on Twitter. It just is. Now, most people tend to be more reactive on Twitter than they are in a larger form. You have the agent arena relationship. And, you know, generally speaking, just a few minutes reading somebody's Twitter stream, you'll get a sense of who they are. And I thought this was a great example. So I'd never heard of Rachel Wilson. So then I went to her. So here's Rachel Wilson, and she's got Rach for Patriarchy. And then she's got the, you know, she's got all the signals here. She's got the Orthodox Cross, Mother of Five Patriarchist, author of Occult Feminism, The Secret History of Women's Liberation, out now. And she had a talk with Tucker Carlson back when he was on Fox. And so, you know, she's pretty much, and again, if you just see a little bit of what someone's in profile, you're going to say, oh, her and James Lindsay on Twitter, that's going to be explosive. And so, sure enough, her tweet is, I don't hate it, but it's inherently flawed. They're talking about egalitarianism and Protestantism and all of these things. You never answered my question. Is egalitarianism central to an Enlightenment philosophy or not? And James Lindsay answers, you are for patriarchy, explicitly. I am a man. Go away. I mean, it's a great tweet. It's a great tweet. But, you know, if you're, you know, let's have a nuanced conversation about the relationship about egalitarianism and the Enlightenment philosophy. And it's like, you're trying to have that on Twitter. It's like trying to discuss philosophy while playing Risk. And I suppose you probably can, but usually, you know, it's a dice game with little movable things where, you know, people get all excited about ruling the world. That's what Risk is. And Twitter is an arena. Now, what was interesting about the little spat is that, you know, you could sort of imagine, maybe, truthfully, maybe not, because you can only read so much via tweet, that some people are a little hurt because I thought James Lindsay was on our side. Well, you know, if you're fighting wokeism, yes, he's going to be on your side, but there's lots of sides. Coalitions are sort of big things. And the fact that James Lindsay can sort of cozy up with certain kinds of Calvinists makes absolute sense in terms of the development of sort of the philosophical and political history, because these things are close together. And again, when I saw this little Twitter spat blow up, I was not surprised in the least. And then everybody's like, well, maybe you guys should talk about it. He's like, I don't want to talk about it. If we can't laugh at these things, we're just going to make ourselves crazy. Let people be who they are. Now, you can want them to be different, want them all you want. And if you're serious about that, I'll talk about that a little bit later in the video, because then you're going to have a little bit of thinking and strategy and kind of figure out, well, if they're like this on Twitter, what's the best way to approach them? And, you know, maybe Benjamin Boyce will set up a conversation, or maybe he won't. You know, probably, I mean, I owe Jonathan an email, but you know, Jonathan and I, Peugeot and I can talk about this, and because in some ways, so I'm weird in that I'm a Calvinist, but I'm also seeing this recession. But I'm not a Doug Wilson Calvinist is sort of up on post-secularity too. But you know, frankly, I'm probably closer to Tim Keller than Doug Wilson, and Doug Wilson didn't have a lot of kind things to say about Tim Keller, and so. There it is. What are you going to say? I actually want to make a video about one of Doug Wilson's recent videos because I think there's more to say in these issues. And the reason I like YouTube and long-form YouTube is you can say more. You just have more time. James Lindsay has been pretty consistent about this whole conversation, and it's super easy to see why. He's a secular materialist in terms of his epistemology. That is his worldview. People speak out of their worldviews. That's what worldviews are. And just sort of strolling up to him to ask him a question like this on Twitter is going to get a reaction like this one. It just is. And what's fun, I just last night I watched the South Park on deep learning, where these little kids in the South Park elementary, the boys were letting ChatGPT respond to their girlfriend's text, and I thought it was just hilarious. ChatGPT would not respond to Rachel Wilson like this, and that's what's fun about human beings. James Lindsay will. And that's what you should expect from James Lindsay. This is who he is. Now, you might decide you don't want to engage him or you don't like him. And all of those things are fine. But it's just who he is. Now, if you want to change him, you're going to have to go about things in a much different way. Because the art of influence in real human beings' lives is not as easy as just writing a really clever tweet. Well, we'll come to that, too. His attack against wokeness has always been based on his worldview, which he still maintains. And I think quite rightly, he looks over at Atheism Plus and says, "You changed, I didn't." I think he's right. And you also have to understand, I said this earlier in a tweet, that James Lindsay as his personality is sort of a root, trunk, branch, and leaf guy. And what do I mean by that? It's he is the kind of guy, he's a digger. And so something starts to bother him and he starts to dig. Just look at his channel. Look at new discourses. Look at the amount of material he has put out about wokeness and its philosophical background and so on and so on. Now, a lot of people, I think, quite rightly said, oh, there's conflation going on here. And I think they're exactly right. You can very easily say, well, communism grows out of Christianity. Yeah, it does over the last 2,000 years. You can't really say Jesus is a communist because it's just an anachronism. So there's value to sort of being a digger. And so other, you know, Carl Truman's a digger too. And so he, you know, writes these very interesting books about, you know, the roots of our secular sexual revolution. And James Lindsay is sort of doing the same thing, but the limitations of digging is that, well, it's not exactly mathematics. And James Lindsay is a mathematician. And so, you know, if you sort of treat it like math, it doesn't really work this way. And I think McGilchrist weighs heavy in here because James sort of approaches this in a very left-brained way. And, you know, so I've got my differences with James Lindsay. Obviously, we don't necessarily share our whole worldviews, but there are aspects of our worldview in which I'm closer to him than I am to Peugeot. But I'm also, because of my Christianity, you know, James Lindsay, you know, against magic, that would be a big conversation. Wouldn't necessarily change either of us, but this is, again, why I have a YouTube channel, go back and forth with this. And, of course, there's the great realignment, which is what Peter Boghossian started talking about. I did a video on that a while ago. I did a video with Peter Boghossian. And Peter Boghossian and James Lindsay are friends, and they did the hoax papers together, but they're also different, and they have different personalities. And they are probably far closer together in terms of their worldview than I am to either of them, but that's the way it is. The divorce of the House of New Atheism, a lot of people asked about that. And what happened, again, was in my conversation with James Lindsay, atheism and atheism plus sort of had a divorce, and they went away from each other. And the exiles, which tend to be sort of secular materialists like Lindsay and Boghossian and Richard Dawkins and this whole tribe and Sam Harris, all sort of feel exiled because the woke secular materialists sort of inherited the kingdom in a way that they didn't, that they have sort of the political primacy that these exiles don't. And then they found new allies in religious communities to fight against what they saw as the biggest threat, but that doesn't mean they're now Christians are necessarily going to be. They might become that because people do change as they go through time. But that kind of change happens quickly. And so when you see something like what happened to Ayaan Hirsi Ali, you sort of pay attention. But the dynamics in her, again, are very different. She grew up in a Muslim country. She went to the Netherlands. These guys have lived in the United States their whole life, and they've not had to suffer what she suffered. And so, you know, they have different stories. And again, beneath this is what we've been talking about on the channel for a very long time, which is the reassessment of secularity. That secularity is a far deeper and more complex thing than it has been portrayed. And again, a lot of, I keep forgetting, I've got the dog here. A lot of Christians sort of, over the last 40 years, have sort of denounced secularity, secular humanism, sort of had a slur with it. But, you know, I've continued to evolve, and Tom Holland has impacted me to see that, well, perhaps secularity has been a really sneaky way that the values of Jesus have, some of the values of Jesus have gone out into the world, even beyond Christianity or beyond secular democracies, beyond the weird world, and have impacted other religions and continue to do so. You know, Jonathan Peugeot keeps saying, well, just a few years, nobody would have understood this, and he's right. And the not understanding this, you sort of see in James Lindsay. And because not understanding doesn't simply mean an inability to understand it cognitively or in the abstract, it means just disagree with it. I don't see the world that way. I see secularity as being a product of the Enlightenment. It has nothing to do with Christianity. I disagree. And, you know, Tom Holland debates this one atheist on Unbelievable a while ago, but that's still the line that Richard Dawkins and James Lindsay and others, I don't know where Lindsay stands on it. I don't want to assume something about what he sees about the relationship between Christianity and secularity, because he's got lots of material out there and I haven't really listened to much of it at all. So I don't know how he sort of navigates the narrative and the philosophical political tree and its development, but that's just a common way that a lot of people in that secular materialist camp frame it. But cultures move slowly and they move very unevenly. And those who are excited about the shiny ancient new thing, which is orthodoxy in America, you know, are really excited because they found a new community and they found a new way to live. And I say, God bless them, but your numbers are pretty small and culture is really huge. And just because you found icons and saints and relics and all of these really cool things, you know, I often talk about steep slope versus gradual slope. There's a lot of reasons why a lot of people like James Lindsay, if they walk into your venue, they're not going to say, ah, there is a God. Most people don't. They just don't. Some people do, and congratulations, but most people don't. There we go. And Matthew Peugeot, the reason I called it sort of a drive-by is that poor Matthew Peugeot sort of got sprayed at too. I mean, because that's how James Lindsay goes through the neighborhood, sort of like doing a drive-by, and anybody with anything that James Lindsay sees as magic. Now, again, there are real roots of this in the Protestant Reformation, iconoclasm. If you listen to Tom Holland when he talks about the reformational period, again, reformers tended to be against superstition, and one's definition of superstition depends a lot on sort of where they stand. Some of the Calvinists that James Lindsay is sidling up to probably are secessionists. Well, what does that mean? That want to secede from the Union? Well, some of them probably do now, but most of them believe that the age of miracles has ceased. And so there are real philosophical camps that are being expressed in this little Twitter storm. And again, that's why none of this surprises me. And then, you know, so then I looked at Matthew's thing here with the rainbow and the clouds and the leprechaun and the spinning wheel and the pot of gold, and I didn't understand it either. I just don't know what to make of it. But I'll tend to look at this and just kind of think, well, what does he mean by this? James Lindsay on Twitter, he's just going to shoot first and not bother to scratch his head. That's the way this thing goes. Post-secularity, this is a point I've been making, I should have had a capital O, post-secularity orthodoxy is not going to be like pre-secularity orthodoxy. Already in the 1990s, people were writing books about ancient modern spirituality and Christianity, and a lot of those were Protestants. And so in a big cultural sea change like we're undergoing now, people are going to be sort of awash in the sea and reach out for anything that's floating. And a lot of what floats is going to be stuff that's very durable and been around a long time. And some of that stuff is orthodoxy or Catholicism or different versions of Protestantism. And some paganism people are going to grab onto. It's just what's happening right now. And then, of course, all the spiral dynamic integralists get all excited because they've got their chart. And I don't think their chart, you know, I think there's value to their chart because many people do sort of follow some kind of progression and evolution with respect to this. And I think the chart does, at least up until the Greens, really does afford, because there's sort of the separation. You see the postmodern green and the teal integral. Where this all breaks down for me is that the people who write the charts, of course, always see themselves at the top, because from the top you can see all the different colors going down. But let's say if you're in a modern orange, you can't see above you, you can only see down. And so very quickly you have this hierarchy of, and I just don't think the world is quite that neat. It's a reduction of the territory. That's what maps are. And it doesn't mean that the map is valueless, but it is what it is. I tend to find a scale like this simplistic, and the creator of the scale usually has themselves or their hierarchy at the top. And sort of, if you read the top, realizes oneness. Okay. Exhibits wisdom, joy, and love. All right, but there's wisdom in modernity that postmoderns forget. Seen in saints and sages throughout history, as if all the saints and sages were somehow alike and they had something together. You know, it's those kinds of things that always just appear reductionistic and simplistic to me, that because, again, everybody's going to come up with their own different ideas of saints and sages. And so let's, And saints and sages also have their own arenas, and you have an agent-arena relationship between a saint and a sage and their arena. Now, a lot of people might say, well, Gandhi was a saint. Gandhi showed the way. But if you put Gandhi as a Jew in 1943 Poland, I don't think he'd be Gandhi. He'd probably just be dead. You know, part of the success of Gandhi's mission was because it was India, and because of the British Raj, and because of British Christianity, and history is just that complex. And that isn't to say that you can't learn from saints and sages throughout history, and it isn't to say that there aren't, in fact, hierarchies. I'm not a nominalist, but to sort of put it on paper like this, yeah, I just generally don't find it terribly convincing. And even, you know, liberal values like freedom of religion, I sort of poked fun at that in my Sunday sermon, where we looked at the king of Judah, Manasseh, who on one hand you know, because he's trying to cozy up to the Assyrian Empire, brings all of the pagan practices of the Assyrian Empire into Jerusalem and has shrine prostitutes and statues in the temple and sacrifices his children on the altar. And, you know, the local shrines of the Lord, which Hezekiah had attempted to suppress, were restored. So people are worshiping the Lord in their backyard. And pagan cults and practices, both native and foreign, were allowed to flourish, with apparatus of fertility, religion, and the ritual of sacred prostitute being tolerated even within the temple. Divination and magic, which currently enjoyed enormous popularity in Assyria, were in vogue in Jerusalem, as were foreign fashions in various sorts. Barbarous rite of human sacrifice again made its appearance, and yet a few verses later, it's noted that, you know, blood filled the streets of Jerusalem because Manasseh was, well, we got religious freedom, but if you, you know, if you do anything to tick off our Assyrian overlords, or for whatever reason tick off the king, we're going to do you in. History is super complex. And I think it's important to recognize and to have conversations about the passing of secularity as a dominant spirit in our world. But you're not going to have it on Twitter. So you want to change somebody and you want to do it on Twitter. Well, again, I don't think the platform can afford a lot. Is your Twitter persona effective? It depends on what your goals are. So James Lindsay has been very effective in using Twitter to build a career for himself as a public intellectual and a speaker. And I bumped into him at ARC and I just had a few words with him. And, you know, he's speaking. He's never been busier. And he's probably, you know, he's finally breaking even in terms of speaker fees and traveling around the world and doing all this. He's a guy with a mission. And your missions bind you and blind you. What you worship tends to define you. So this is what he's doing, and how he's used Twitter has really worked well for him. And the part of the thing is that the outlandish works on Twitter in different ways than it works on TV. I've seen the same thing with Jordan Peterson. Would Jordan Peterson be who he is if he wasn't in some ways sort of outlandish on Twitter? Now, do you want to be outlandish on Twitter? Do you want to be that person? You know, so Elon Musk, for all of the talk about, you know, using the blue checks and making Twitter this and verifying, and, you know, none of that has come to be. And I don't know that it will ever come to be, basically because of the structure of the platform. It just is what it is. Having said that, you can always find a counter argument. So if you listen to Megan Phelps Roper's story, she will regularly say that there were thoughtful, winsome people on Twitter that basically got her out of the Westboro Baptist Church. Now, is that a good thing? Because it meant her deconstructing from Westboro Baptist Christianity. And that gets into the whole really messy, complex question about religious lines and religious identity, and, you know, where will she go? We don't know. But yeah, people can change on Twitter. So I just said, well, it's a platform for this or that. I'm proven wrong. Again, every exception in some ways defies the rule and proves the rule. And I think, just in summary, be thankful for participation. So James Lindsay, Against Magic, Conceptual James, says, classical liberals don't want to be left alone. They want to be left alone to make their own decisions. That's a big difference. They understand what individuals are the only people who have the first-person experience of weighing costs and gains. And then he has this little thing about John Stuart Mill. And you know what? I'm glad I live in the country that I live on. I'm glad we have the freedoms that we have. Are there issues with it? Absolutely. But this is where I am. Now, there's a lot you can take apart in terms of cognitive science, in terms of individualism, and I've got plenty of hours on YouTube sort of crunching on those kinds of things, asking questions, exploring it. you'll find that I use Twitter a lot, but I don't usually use it for this. Twitter's a good place to sort of pick up signals, find articles, have little short exchanges, usually with people that you're not in conflict with, generally speaking on Twitter. Once I feel some conflict developing, I'll go one tweet, one response, and then sort of leave it at that. Because beyond that, usually it's sort of a waste of my time and a waste of my glandular juices. But it's a really cool thing you get to play. I think the world is better because it has risk in it, even if my wife won't play with me. My sons will. And Twitter is a fun thing to play with too. And if you want to influence people, learn how to be skillful. And that's part of the fun of the game as well. Learn competence in influencing people. And so if via Twitter you want to turn conceptual James into an orthodox believer, I'd say go for it. But you're gonna have to play the game a lot better than this if you actually want to create, if you want to influence someone. And again, people are funny. They get influenced in a lot of different ways, but I'm happy for the openness on Twitter that let James back in, and that's why I partially don't block people, because it's, you know, even people that are sort of annoying to me on Twitter, there's a chance I might learn something from them. So let them annoy me a little bit more. So there's my video on the little Twitter war between James Lindsay and the Ortho Bros and Bras. So leave a comment, flame away.